welcome everyone to another episode of the Conscious Junkie podcast show. So guess what? I'm still in Talala Retreat, and this time I am joined by teacher Josh Blau. Welcome, Josh.
Hi, thank you.
So usually, Josh, I have this whole introduction prepared for the teachers or for the speakers on the show, but since you are a native speaker and a much better storyteller than myself, I just want to flip the script and throw one question at you in which you can just sort of explain for everyone in yoga world who lived under a stone who you are. Yeah?
Yeah, awesome.
And let me just start with a question about your spiritual background. I did some research and I found a nice story on yogaboys.com.
Yeah.
About your family and your school life.
Yeah, I mean, in what in particular are you referring to?
So this interview was about you growing up with your family, like not just family, mom and dad, but with your cousins and with your grandparents and...
Yeah, wow, big story. And how it ties into spirituality. So basically, I went to a Jewish school. I grew up in a family of Russian migrants. I was first generation Australian. So we all lived in this little house. My mum, my auntie, my uncle, my grandfather, my grandmother, my great grandmother, and my little cousin. And my dad was out of the picture. And, you know, my dad left at a young age, and that definitely left a... not such a great imprint on my childhood, and you know, now looking back on it all, I think I grew up quite a introspective, lonely kid. You know, we all sort of seek love from anywhere, but particularly from our mother or our father. And then my school life, you know, I never really felt like I fit in anywhere from a really young age at school. There was a lot of different sort of, there was like the wealthier Jews, and then there was kind of the small few of us who were the migrants.
Was this in Melbourne?
In Melbourne, yeah, Melbourne, Australia, sorry. And yeah, like religion, I never really understood it. I never really understood the concepts. But there was always something that kind of drew me in. I found myself quite drawn to the idea of God and the idea of spirituality, but... I think what was happening, and probably like in a lot of school systems, is you had people who weren't necessarily having the direct experience of God teaching God or talking about God. That's a very sort of classic religious thing now. And yeah, basically fast track about two or three years after I finished school, I went, or 1 year after I finished school, I went to India.
That's funny, but that caught my attention. Like, who comes up with going to India after school?
It's a funny thing because...
it's all Bali, especially when you're living in Australia. People go to Bali or explore, like, the usual tropical...
Well, the funny thing is, India, for young Jewish kids, was actually quite a popular destination. So it was quite common for young Jews, 19, 20, 21, to go to India and chase the what's called the Israeli trail or the Hummus trail. So lots of Israelis go to Israel to, you know, escape from the army, do a lot of drugs and really get messed up. And so it was just normal that we all, myself and friends, were like going to India to chase the sort of, let's call it drug dream.
No, they call it like that?
Well, I'm just making that up right now, the drug dream, but it's kind of what you're chasing. Which it's interesting because one of my teachers talks about drugs, he says that it's actually a really valid form of spirituality in the sense that, you know, what's spirit or what's spirituality is the desire to connect to your spirit or the desire to experience a reality other than what it is you're experiencing, which is really what drug takers are doing. They're seeking something other than what they're experiencing because they're unsatisfied or dissatisfied. And
I love how Ram Dass talks about this. Have you ever heard that about this LSD? And he makes it sound like everyone should do it because it sounds so profound, not just taking drugs and going bonkers, but it sounds so profound.
It's a beautiful way to expand your consciousness. Yeah. And sometimes when we do that, we just don't have the right teacher or the right guidebook for it.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, this is a really long story, so I'm trying to just hit the highlights for you and keep it brief. But basically, I was on a train to... from Delhi to Udaipur, and I just got sort of shysted by these police who, you know, caught me smoking a cigarette on the train and basically took like $150 off me.
Oh, that's a boy.
Threatening to take me to the jailhouse and all this sort of stuff. And so I was very much like in a Western frame of mind. I was like, I don't want to talk to any Indians. I just want to meet my friends and do the Western thing. And about 5 minutes later, this little man comes up to me and he's like, oh, hello, sir. Would you like to do some yoga? And I was like, no, go away. Like, you're probably just some shyster who's just trying to take my money and whatever. And that finished that interaction. Two towns later, I was in Jaipur. And I was walking down the street, and this same little Indian man just randomly saw me on the street. He's like, oh, my friend, come do some yoga. And I was like, yoga? Like, I didn't no idea what yoga was, never heard of it before. And I was like, okay, like, something just in me was like, go with this man, basically. And so he took me onto this rooftop and taught me about 8-9 poses, you know, shoulder stand, cobra, down dog. And he said, do this every day for happiness. And I just...
It was just you and him?
Just me and him.
Yeah.
Just me and him. And I did. And he didn't want any money. He took photos of all the poses and said, I can remember. And I tried to pay him, he didn't want any money. And, you know, now when I look back, it was very much like a guardian angel sort of moment of, you know, 19-year-old in India.
Yeah. Oh, you were 19.
19.
Yeah.
Before I'd gone to meet anyone of my friends. I was on my own at the time.
Yeah.
And I was going to meet my friends in Goa. And...
The drug town.
Seriously. And yeah, I just started doing it every day. And in hindsight, now I understand the experience. But when I finished that trip, because I was quite a depressed and angry kid, you know, we all have issues mm-hmm. as kids, especially as teenagers, but, you know, I was dealing with a lot of stuff around my dad leaving and all this kind of, you know, abandonment and vulnerability mm-hmm. issues. And I just had this epiphany, like, oh, if I'm just, like, happier, if I just think happy thoughts or put out a happiness, then I'll start experiencing more happiness. And, you know, there was still a long journey to get
but
to
But really,
where
that
I am
epiphany
now.
Came quickly. That was on that exact journey that you already had that epiphany.
It only took about
like...
a month of doing that because wow. I did his sequence every morning.
Yeah.
I would, even when I was with my friends, I was still doing drugs and all that. But before I did anything, I would get up in the morning and I would go on the rooftop and I would do the sequence and I would close the eyes and I would, now looking back, I would meditate. I didn't know what it was back then. And that's, I guess, the, let's call it the start of my spiritual journey.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So, Josh, when I take your classes now, you're teaching, I think you've been teaching, in the beginning a bit of vinyasa, but now you bring it back more to hatha.
Mm.
Is that what you requested on the schedule, or it just was supposed to be like that?
I mean, I taught power vinyasa for about 3 years, very lovingly. And, you know, one of the beautiful things about the agreement to come here and teach at Talala was they said that I could teach... my specific style of hatha yoga.
Yeah.
Well, not my specific style, the style that I love to teach. And so, yeah, the first few classes there was a bit of vinyasa, but then they changed that on the schedule, and so it's hatha yoga. Let's call it broadly, but it's specifically tantric hatha yoga.
Tantric hatha yoga.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, if you all say tantric hatha yoga, it like sparks a lot of curiosity within me. Now, I've experienced your classes, but I know that most people from the West and where I live, they're very drawn to this vinyasa practice, which I think is also a lovely practice, but it's just very different from what we do in class while we're here. Mm-hmm. Now, people can't all come to Talala while you shoot, guys, but can you just explain a little bit more about this particular style that you like to teach most? Is that what you practice also, like?
Yeah. My daily practice is Vedic meditation.
Okay.
So that's for about 4 years now been my kind of non-negotiable everyday practice.
Yeah, your
about
routine.
2 or 3 times a week now I do a tantric hatha practice led by my teacher, Rod Stryker, Yoga Rupa Rod Stryker. And then I'll do different 40-day sadhanas throughout the year. So at the moment, I'm doing a 40-day yoga nidra sadhana where I do a yoga nidra every morning and most afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember the question.
Yeah. So like you teach tantric hatha yoga.
Yeah.
And that's what you practice with some other like...
With my teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how would you explain to people who never experience? Because when you say tantra, people think about sex. That's how
correct.
Like most of the people, when you think about, when you tell about hatha, people are like, no, I want vinyasa.
Yeah.
So there's not even some. There's something that goes a bit wrong there. So how would you explain it?
Well, it's interesting because
if you had to sell it,
when my teacher, if I had to sell it, I would say that we're selling fulfillment. We're selling bliss. And it's funny because when my teacher talks about Tantra, he often says, when I advertise, I don't use the word Tantra, because people think that when they get there, they're all going to take their clothes off, start doing massage and have some sort of big orgy. But actually, you know, Tantra in its essence means many things, but one of those things is to reveal or to protect. And what that implies is that through the practice of Tantra, we're actually revealing the sacredness of life to ourselves. And within that, what we're doing is we're revealing the sacredness of life when we set our dinner table, when we fold our bed sheets, when we have an interaction, when we love, when we care. And so it's actually Tantra in everything. And what was blown out of proportion is, you know, Tantra when we make love or when we're intimate with a partner. And in the same sort of way that, you know, Kundalini kind of, not cornered, Kundalini sort of, you know, got in on the name of Kundalini Yoga, and now Kundalini Yoga means, you know, you wear white, you have a turban, and you do lots of ha, 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 ha movements. But really, all yoga, asana, is Kundalini Yoga, because mm-hmm. Kundalini is prana that you're moving through your mm-hmm. body, is energy you're moving, and all yoga does that. So technically, you know, all yoga would be Kundalini Yoga. And so, you know, if I was to explain Tantric Hatha, I mean, Tantric Hatha, really what it is a simple formula of using asana, pranayama, that's poses, breathing, mudra, which means sealing or energetic locks, also known as bandhas, and different mantras. And you use all of those techniques within the asanas that you practice. And that's what makes it Tantric Hatha Yoga. And I guess if I was to sell it to someone, I would probably ask the same question my teacher asks, is what's the quality of your life like?
Oh yeah, I like
and
that.
Are
one
you satisfied with your life? Because if you're not satisfied with your life and you're doing lots of yoga or lots of vinyasa, then it's likely that you're not doing the right yoga for you. And often we get drawn to, you know, in the West, we're very used to feeling good. You know, when you ask someone why they do vinyasa, because it feels so good and people want to feel good. And often, particularly with spiritual practice, what feels good isn't necessarily what we need. And what we need doesn't necessarily feel good. And I think the, you know, the wave of vinyasa yoga has done so much good for us, in the sense that it's...
You do think that?
100%.
Okay, good.
100%.
Yeah.
I think anyone that says otherwise is missing the bigger picture, you know?
Yeah.
And there's so much around, there's so much value. You know, the person who might be doing vinyasa yoga, had they not been doing it, they'd probably still be sitting at their computer desk.
Yeah.
You know, maybe doing CrossFit or something like mm-hmm. that. And so the fact that they're still doing something is fantastic, because they're moving, they're breathing, they're working the body.
Yeah.
They're cultivating some self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Now, is that necessarily the best form of yoga they could be doing? Perhaps not. Who am I to judge? Who are we to judge? But, you know, what's becoming more and more obvious now that vinyasa yoga has been around for 20, 30 years, longer, is that people are realizing, hey, I've been doing yoga for 5 years, but I'm still really stressed. I've been doing yoga for 5 years, but I'm still unhappy, or I'm still anxious.
Yeah.
And so often what happens is, at some point, that individual will say, well, I need to find someone who can help me with that. And when they do find that person, generally the answer is, it's time to learn to meditate, or it's time to learn some pranayama, some mm-hmm. breathing, or it's time to do yin. You see, yin yoga is hugely
yeah.
on the rise.
Yeah, definitely.
Because what people are really needing is to slow down.
Yeah. You know,
we live in a world where we're full of pitta, we're full of heat,
yeah.
we're full of digestive issues, we're high vata, we're high energy, we're high mind chatter.
Yeah.
And the, you know, in Hatha Yoga, there's a saying that says the sun doesn't discriminate what it illuminates. And what that means is, when we practice fast-paced vinyasa, we're moving prana through the body at a very quick pace. And when we do that, we begin to illuminate whatever it is that we're experiencing. And so someone who's experiencing stress and anxiety,
it becomes more,
it becomes
that, yeah.
heightened, it becomes accentuated. Whereas if we do moon practices or lunar practices, where we're stabilizing the mind, grounding the mind, we have this steady foundation, so that then when we do begin to do more active vinyasa or mm-hmm. more active pranayama techniques mm-hmm. or whatever it is, we have the ability to harness that energy and actually put it towards whatever it is that we want, whether it's intention setting, whether it's creating
yeah.
a business, whether it's mm. a relationship, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we don't feel this kind of like, I did my yoga, but I'm still feeling like I need to, you know, have a Valium and relax.
Yeah, that's still crazy. Common. It's not the balance, but we actually all want from our yoga practice.
Correct.
Like feeling a bit more grounded. And for talking for myself, I have a lot of energy, but if I'm not doing the right yoga, for me, it goes everywhere. It's just, I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
Whereas I do more grounded practice or yin yoga, I struggle with it a lot. But then I feel much more grounded and it feels like it's two sides coming more together than it's your like...
Yeah.
Even investing more in that young side and that's in that heat and that
And when you look at the world we live in, it's a stimulating environment, you know.
Yeah.
Phones, technology, you know, when we lived in tribal days, we probably only would have seen, you know, the people who lived in our tribe. We never would have really seen new people. And and then the hunter that went out into the wilderness and saw someone from another tribe, they would bring that story back and tell everyone around the campfire, I was hunting and then I saw a human from the other tribe, and everyone would go, ooh, and it was this thing. Whereas now, particularly with social media, I mean, we see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people.
Thousands of stories, thousands of faces, of so it's too much.
But our brain hasn't actually... caught up in that. Our brain hasn't caught up in from an evolutionary standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Our brain is still quite primitive, and we only have such a small capacity to use it properly. So there's just no doubt that we're all experiencing this high level of stress and high level of anxiety. And and you know, as Rod says, and I keep mentioning Rod Stryker because he's my main teacher.
Where's he from? He's from the U.S.
He's from Colorado.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's where you did your first teacher training.
No, I did my first teacher training in LA at a studio called Black Dog Yoga, which was really an eclectic mix of hatha. It was a really good general blend of styles. And then I did my 500 hour with Dharma Mitra in New York City. And I've since done a number of other trainings. But, you know, Rod always says, go to the gym to exercise. Use your yoga practice to balance your energy.
Mm.
And that, for me, has become... you know, the most important thing, that if I'm going to do any sort of spiritual practice, it's what my energetic body needs, my energetic system needs. And then I'll go surfing and
pretty
then I'll
physical.
Do,
yeah, you started
I'll
doing
do strength training, you know, and build my body in a beautiful way rather than relying on yoga.
You wouldn't step into a Vinyasa class much likely anymore.
You won't see me in it very often. If a friend is teaching and I'm feeling in the mood, I might go, but it's also, you know, now that I've been exposed to tantric hatha, I mean, I like to spend 2 minutes in side angle pose and really marinate.
Instead of 5 seconds.
Yeah, just it's for me where I'm at and what I love, it's not for me. And I know that will make some people go crazy. But I feel like the work I've done now has gotten me to a point where I can be in the pose and really, you know, BKS Iyengar says that the yoga starts the moment we want to exit the pose.
Yeah.
So, you know, according to Mr. Iyengar, Vinyasa yoga isn't yoga because, you know, you're never giving yourself an opportunity. That's not even me. It's just what Iyengar said. You know, you're not even giving yourself an opportunity to be in the asana, to be in the pose. So it's something to consider, you know. And I have a bad hip from 10 years of power vinyasa. I've torn my labrum. I have a labrum tear. And so that makes fast-paced vinyasa movement really challenging for me. So... All signs lead to, you know, I don't need to go anymore.
And you would not promote it so much anymore.
It depends.
Oh well, you leave it open, but you.
Yeah, I think everyone needs to decide and do the research themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, if a student came to me who was quite overweight, quite lazy, quite cuffic, quite heavy, quite depressed, vinyasa yoga would be great.
Yeah,
great,
because you want that energy to
great
flow more.
Them.
And,
but for your thin 24-year-old or 30-year-old or 36-year-old,
Fata whirlwind.
A woman who's experiencing anxiety on a daily basis and stress, you know, arm balances and inversions and all that stuff, like...
Feeling pressure in the class to perform, do your best,
You know, it's not necessarily long-term going to be what's... And not necessarily, I'm saying, not definitely, no absolutes here. It's not necessarily what's going to be the most beneficial for them.
Mm-hmm.
Might feel good at the time, might feel good in the moment when they're having their acai bowl after, but, you know, for the most part, it's unlikely that that is going to be the most beneficial practice
for the overall health.
Energetically, overall health long term.
Hmm. All right, cool, Josh. It's nice. It's nice. And now,
long-winded answer.
But no, but it's very profound, and that's what I like. You talk a lot in your classes.
Yes,
it's
I'm glad
nice.
You enjoy to listen.
No, I
never
do.
Know.
So there's one other thing I noticed in your classes, and that is that I try to say this right, but you're pretty rigid in your in the way that you explain things. And sometimes when you see like people moving from downward facing dog plank and then they go like chaturanga, and you sometimes I can see you getting freaked out, but it comes from a good place because you don't want people to injure themselves.
Correct.
And I like that approach because I went to India and then they're not like petting you and like, oh, they're pretty rigid, and I like it because then it lands. If everyone would like just tap my shoulder and like, oh yeah, doing good, but it wouldn't work for me.
Yeah.
But some people, they get so confused because they're not used to that sort of approach.
Yeah.
Do you choose for that or does it come natural or?
One of my first main teachers was a Romanian gymnast. Her name's Ella, and she would literally swear in the class. Like she'd say, fucking hell, Josh, like how many times do I have to tell you, don't bend your, you know, don't hyperextend your knees, push through your hands. Like I'm sick and tired of telling you this. And it just always instilled in me this idea of like, we're not here to muck around. And you know, the modern wave of yoga is very like la-di-da and we should all feel good and love each other. But that is, you know, when you look at traditional yoga, that is not what it was like. I mean, you go to India and there are still teachers traditionally teaching and they'll walk around with a stick and whack you if you're out of alignment. And and I think, you know, we've developed this culture of just pandering to each other, which is that, oh, you're doing great, well done. And whilst there is some benefit in that, I have never learnt well that way. So I always feel like with my students, that is the best way to get through to them. And you know, the vinyasa culture has created a lack of discipline and a lack of specificity.
That's for sure, like alignments.
I'll just do this because it feels good, I'll just dump into my joints
or just hyperextend because it looks better.
Correct. Or, rather than, you know, okay, this is my plank. You're talking about the vinyasa itself, the plank, upward facing dog, chaturanga sequence. You know, there isn't any time spent in refining that. And so when we refine it, it's important that we understand the specific detail behind it. And I feel like when I am more passionate in that with people, it hits them harder and they tend to understand it quicker.
When you are a little bit more rigid and like, not, yeah. So, but you mostly teach longer at one place, right? Because I can imagine someone going to the first class, first they had never tried hatha, and then this rigid teacher, like, they're like, what? They feel very tired, like, this ego rises because that's not the way they're used to being approached, you know? But I think when people spend more time with you, they will start to notice that it's really for their own sake.
And that there's a building block. That when they've learned that, then there's the next phase. And when they've learned that, then there's the next phase.
Yeah.
And you know, I used to teach in Melbourne for a couple of years full time. So I had developed regular students and regular client base. And basically, you know, I was in, I did my main teacher training, my first teacher training in LA. And I came home, and this was still before too many guys were, there weren't that many male yoga teachers around. And in Australia, no one was really doing handstands. No one was really doing arm balances. It was still kind of quite new. It was happening in LA, and not many people in Melbourne were doing it. And I came back and I was teaching, you know, handstand, press to handstand, one arm, you know, forearm balance, all this kind of crazy stuff. And I was getting crazy numbers, like all my classes were packed. And after about a year, I brought Ella out, that teacher that I was talking about. We brought her out to a studio.
The Romanian girl.
The Romanian teacher, my gymnast teacher. And she came to all of my classes while I was in town just to, you know, give me feedback and assess how I was progressing. And at the end of one class, she came up to me and she was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm just trying to teach like you. And she's like, but you haven't been teaching in LA for 20 years. Like, you've been teaching for 5 seconds. Your students don't even know how to do triangle and you're teaching them how to do handstands. And it really like just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like I got it. I was like, oh my God, she's so right. Like I'm trying to teach people crow and, you know, forearm balances when they can't even do a forward fold, when they can't even do Tadasana. And I literally was like, all right, that's it. Like triangle.
That moment or were you first like, argh.
That moment. Because you know, I have this thing with my teachers when I declare that someone is my teacher, when I feel that, for the most part, anything that they tell me, I'll take on straight away. Have no, because I understand
that they understand you.
And they've been there and they understand way more than me. they've been doing it for way longer. And not any, not just anyone is my teacher. I only have a few people who I would regard as my guru or as my teacher. And so when she said it, I was just like, yeah, you're right. And from that moment, I was like Triangle and Warrior 2, and that was it. Like, we weren't doing anything, and I lost a lot of students. Yeah. But after about 6 months, I gained a whole
new
array of students. And that's...
That's an interesting transition, right?
If anyone out there is listening who's a yoga teacher or starting or, you know, feels like you're in a rut, I mean, all I would ever say is teach what you know and teach from your heart, because you think you're going to lose people, but new people will always come because people will always resonate with what you teach. And the point that you made of like, my students know that they're getting what they're getting for a very specific reason.
Yeah.
And then the few people that aren't into it, they won't come back, and that's cool too. Doesn't bother me.
But I think this is a very important point, because especially with beginning yoga teachers, I'm thankful that I've never been that way, but they're checking before how many people are on my list. Oh my goodness, this other teacher has more students coming, and they're so busy with like...
Yeah.
And it's actually sad because it comes from a good place, but you should really stick to what is legit for yourself. Mm. Otherwise, it just becomes...
Yeah, and I used to be like that, and we all have that in us, right?
Of course,
we all want to be
fair
liked.
Enough.
We all want to be loved. We all want
to
be
feel enough.
Like our work is being validated.
Mm.
I think that, you know, there's in a world now where there's so much yoga and so many yoga teachers and it's so popular, the question to ask yourself is, how am I different? You know, how is what I'm offering different? Then how is what I'm offering impacting people? And more than that, am I actually practicing what I'm preaching?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I teaching yoga and then going to get wasted that night?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, going to drink 2 bottles of wine or whatever it is that you're kind of... Because that stuff becomes very quickly... caught out, becomes very transparent. It might take 10 years.
You ever drink?
Look, the short answer is no. But one of my teachers talks a lot about shared experience, and that really the purpose of our life here is to have shared experience. So if I'm with someone who's, you know, really wanting to share a drink with me, I might entertain that idea. But it's, you know, it's very unlikely now, because, you know, the amount of practice that I do, any sort of toxin, it immediately just makes me feel terrible.
You enjoy this pure mind, you know how to maintain.
Look,
it
I spent all of my 20s doing enough drugs.
You're 32 now?
31, yeah, 31. About to turn 32, but I spent all of my 20s doing enough drugs for the planet, you know? My friends and I did enough drugs for a whole country to do, you know. I've done it, I've experienced it, I've drank enough, I've smoked enough weed, I've taken enough acid, I've done it all. Now I know where the real bliss lies, and anytime I try and have something to make me think I'm gonna feel better, it often just does the opposite. And don't take my word for it. I always say to students, like, do the research yourself. And you know, Ram Dass also says in one of his podcasts, I remember hearing, he's like, if you really wanna take drugs for a spiritual experience, meditate for 10 years and then try acid. You know, because then you're really going to experience what it has to offer. Otherwise, you're just experiencing a little sneak peek. And you know, we don't want to just be peeking through the window of life. We want to be on the field, playing the game, controlling the sport, you know. And that for me is where it's at now. And you know, I don't have anything wrong with alcohol or anything like that. It's just that the comment I made before, it's really about, you know, what are you standing up in front of the room for? Why? And this is the first thing we teach in our teacher training in our 200-hour. It's like, what's your purpose? Why are you here? Are you here because you think it's cool? Are you here because it's trendy? Are you here because you like the power trip? Like, why are you actually teaching?
Mm-hmm.
If you know that, then your classes will be unique. Doesn't matter what you teach. Doesn't matter what style, vinyasa, yin, hatha, meditation. If you just understand your purpose...
Go inside to discover what that is instead of outside looking what others do.
Correct.
Yeah.
Then your classes will be powerful. Words will be powerful. What it is that you offer will be unique, and then
authentic.
Students will come to you.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's helpful for people, because we all get stuck and we feel, I don't know, insecure about that. But just always go back to yourself. Now, Josh, just one quick question in between. How would you rate your life? Between 0 and 10.
Oh man.
A quick one, this question.
Between 0 and 10, it's definitely a 10. If I could go higher, I'd go higher. My life is fantastic, and it doesn't really waver anymore, which is the best part.
Okay, yeah. That's awesome. Oh yeah, so we've been talking, I've heard you saying some things about gurus. Do you have one guru? Or yeah, I think guru teacher is confusing, but...
I have a few. You know, guru in itself means remover of darkness. Mm. And so I've had two or three really main teachers who have removed the darkness for me. Number one was Johnny Pollard from One Giant Mind. He was the first guru for me. And then through him, I met Tom Knowles, who was the founder of Vedic Meditation. And then since then, Rod Stryker has shone new light on yoga for me in a really big way.
So, yeah. And perhaps a tiny Indian man. That first.
And Pandaji, yes, of course.
Oh, you know his name?
Yeah, Pandaji. He comes on all our trainings, and he's just the most divine little human. He sees God in everything. He sees God in the trees and the flowers, and he's just the most incredible. You know, he's always smiling, he's always happy, and he's an inspiration on how we want to eventually live our life in its entirety.
Yeah, that's pretty.
He's absolutely a good
awesome. And so now I have a couple of questions which are just really fun to ask, but I have one question. I'm going to ask you to, well, no, I'm just going to go, what is yoga not?
What is yoga not?
Yes. Or if it's easier for you to like sort of, with all the, I don't know. With...
Yoga is everything, but it is also not everything. It is the way in which we approach everything, but it's also the way in which we are aware, or when we're not aware. To be honest, it's if you're not being a good person, you're not practicing yoga. I think that's it.
If you're not being a good person, you're not practicing yoga.
If you're not doing good to yourself and you're not doing good in the world, you're not practicing yoga. You can do all the vinyasas and all the handstands in the world, but the true essence of yoga is, am I establishing this state of being within myself, and am I then using it for good? Hmm. And in Vedanta, it's called Yogastha Kuru Karmani, established in being, perform action. So I establish the state of yoga within myself, and then I perform action with it.
Hmm.
And that to me is the opposite of that is what yoga is not. So
okay.
If you are not establishing that self sense of self, and then you are not using it for good, then you're not practicing yoga, in my view. And, you know, like I've said this in my classes sometimes. I had a teacher that said, you can never practice yoga. You can only experience
it. Yeah, I like how you explain that. It's like the busy mind coming together with a quiet place within.
You're either experiencing yoga or you're not. You can do pranayama and asana and meditation. You can do all these techniques. And you know, I apologize if this is a bit controversial for anyone that's listening.
I like contradictions.
But you can never practice yoga, because yoga is a state. It's a state of mind. It's a state of union. So you can't practice. It's just like you can't practice falling asleep.
You practice the tools towards
exactly.
It, maybe. But
you either asleep or you're not. You can create the conditions for yourself to fall asleep. You can create the conditions for yourself to slip into the state of yoga or slip into the state of meditation, but you can't practice it. And now I'm really splitting hairs here, you know, like in the modern world, we practice yoga, we go to a yoga class.
It's like shortcut for
that's practicing yoga. But if I was to talk from a traditional standpoint, from what I've learned from my teachers, we don't really practice it. We are either it or we're not, and
that
we can do things to become it, or we can do things to experience it, depending on whether you believe in dual or non-dual. But there's never a place we can try and get to, because it's always there, and we're always experiencing it if we open ourselves up to it.
That's a great way to put it. Thank you. Now lunch is waiting for you. I'm just gonna throw a couple of, I would say, fun questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Just answer them quickly. I know it's going to be hard.
I'm just gonna say the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. Just like that. That's perfect. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What behavior of others gets the worst out of you?
Gets the worst out of me.
Yes. What behavior triggers you big time?
Arrogance.
All right. Post you hate most.
Post?
Oh, sorry. Pose. Yoga pose. Asana.
That I hate most. Used to be Upavishta Konasana, wide-legged forward fold, and then I learned to love it. And yeah, you know, it's funny because I said the same thing in the Boys of Yoga interview. Now I don't really hate any pose because
I saw that, and I was just wondering if it changed.
Yeah, I'm not trying to hit any point, so I'm not like, oh, I really hate this. It's just like, okay, if this is where I'm at in the pose, I'll get a block and I'll just chill.
Yeah, okay, good. <You know? laughs> Next one.
Yep.
Eating or sleeping?
Eating.
Headstand or handstand?
Both.
No, okay. Favorite day of the week?
Sunday.
Biggest achievement ever?
Creating a yoga teacher training.
Biggest insecurity?
The need to be loved and validated.
Oh, that's very beautiful. How old were you when you had your first kiss? You don't have to answer. You
maybe
can
like
say
10 school. Or 11 or something. I'd really
that's
just
so young.
I'd be guessing maybe 12, somewhere around there.
Wow, that's
yeah,
young.
Yeah, it was with a family friend and it was really, really sweet and cute. And I can remember it quite vividly, actually.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
I'm
cool.
I'm a big lover. So
okay.
That stuff sticks with me.
Thanks for sharing that.
Of course.
Pranayama or meditation?
Meditation.
Last time you got drunk?
4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that.
Chilling or thriving?
Chilling.
Oh, that's honest. If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
Walrus.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why is that?
It just came to me because I feel
okay,
like
cool.
It was an octopus for a period of time.
Yeah.
And they're like a polar bear at some points, but I'm just a big teddy bear. And so now that I've been surfing, I really feel like a big walrus just kind of flapping about on the surfboard. So
having fun.
Having the time. You know, you watch it, look at a walrus, they're having the time of their lives.
Yeah,
they're just lying
and they don't
on
care
the,
how it looks.
Lying on the beach, eating a fish or something. They're not, nothing's fazing them. I love that.
Walrus.
Love that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is a fun one. What's the most unprofessional thing you've seen a yoga teacher ever do?
Have sex with their students.
I hope you didn't actually see it, but okay.
Oh,
I get
well,
that.
Sorry. See it in.
But that's terrible, yeah.
What have I seen? I guess, you know, being intoxicated and flirting with a student.
Okay, yeah. That's going there. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Walking or driving?
Driving.
The silliest thing you've heard someone say about you ever?
About me?
That you're like, what the heck? If nothing comes, that's fine.
Nothing's really coming to mind.
Who's the most impressive person alive today?
Rod Stryker.
He's
first that comes to mind, and I'm just
fair
going
enough.
With it. Yeah, he's phenomenal. He's in a testament to the amount of discipline that when you attend the discipline to your practice, the benefits and rewards that you gain from it.
It's much bigger than anything.
Yeah. It's all about commitment to practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last one.
Yep.
Where are you heading to next?
Back to Melbourne to run a 200-hour teacher training.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome, Josh. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. This
you
has been so much
quickly
fun.
Quickly and from like
straight up
that walrus and that kiss.
Some sort
that's
of psychology,
awesome.
psychological experiment, right?
Yeah.
First thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, that's it.
Just putting it
no
out
hesitation.
There.
Awesome.
Love it.
So, if people would experience tantric hatha yoga, where would you send them? Well, where are you at, and where would you send them?
Well, I would firstly say jump on Yoga Glow and study with Rod Stryker.
He's on
incredible.
Yoga Glow.
He's on Yoga Glow. He's got some amazing courses.
Is that how you practice?
That's how I practice with him, yep. And then I see him once a year. I try to see him once a year.
Okay.
In person somewhere, mostly Bali. And then, of course, myself and my close friend and teaching partner, Izzy Irene, we run On People Yoga, and we have teacher trainings around the world. So this year we have a teacher training in Tuscany, in Melbourne, in India, and then also other retreats and workshop intensives that we run. And so that's onpeopleyoga.com, onpeopleyoga on Instagram or anything like that. And
it's a 200-hour
tantric hatha yoga. And then in 2020, we'll be running a 300-hour called Dharma, Sadhana, and Seva, which is basically the return to what we believe real yoga is and authentic yoga is, and how to own that in your life and then give that to the world or share that with the world. Probably here at Talal, actually. So,
oh, yeah. That's a good little...
Yeah, exciting news.
Yeah, exciting news. Okay. Yeah. One last thing, Josh. Where does the world need more of?
Love.
No.
Yeah, simple. If, you know, everybody at the root of it is looking for love. Everybody at the root of it, even Trump, well, in his way, he's seeking validation. In his way, he's seeking love. He just doesn't have the right playbook for it. And that's ultimately what we're all after. The young kid holding up a liquor store is you know, looking for love. It's just he doesn't know how to get it because he didn't get it from his parents. He didn't get it in the way that he should have. You know, the Ku Klux Klan, they're looking for validation, they're looking for love. Like ultimately, in some weird twisted way, we get to this point where we haven't understood that what we're actually looking for is not only within us, but it's all around us.
That's right.
And because we all feel that what's all around us is actually not around us, we feel like we need to get it and claim it and fight for it and argue.
If people don't give that to us, we get agitated and...
Correct.
Yeah.
It's a corny, sort of cheesy response, but...
No, it's true.
It's love,
it's
sweet love.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thank you. What a pleasure.
And thank you guys for listening. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do not forget to like, subscribe, and take a little moment to review this podcast. We'll be back on the 18th of March, in which we're going to have our first Dutch episode ever. Next English episode will be available on the 1st of April, and this is not a joke. Once again, thank you so much for listening, and namaste.